And we're going to take a shift and look at the Oscars. We are joined here by Jorge Rivas, who is multimedia editor and pop culture blogger for ColorLines.com. And his work has appeared in Elliot.com, Essence.com, The Root, Alternate, and Feministing. Lynn Stewart Paramore is with us. She is Alternate's senior editor and director of Alternate's New Economic Dialogue Project and author of Reading the Sphinx, Ancient Egypt in 19th Century Literary Culture. And Lynn Stewart Paramore and Jorge Rivas, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So I was really interested in what both of you had been writing about the Oscars, and I was thinking about them themselves. But let me just start with you, Lynn, and let's jump into the nature of who makes these decisions and why they're made the way they are. I find the demographics of the Academy Award organization interesting.
Yes, the demographics are interesting. A study was done in 2009 by USC showing that over 50% of the ticket buyers for movies are women, but the people that are making decisions about what movies win Academy Awards and what movies get made, et cetera, are primarily men. A 2012 study in the LA Times showed that 77% of Oscar voters in the Academy are male, and they have a median age of 62. Not surprisingly, they're mostly white. Some of the Academy's 15 branches are almost completely white and male. They compose 90% of 5 branches, according to the LA Times. That includes cinematography and visual effects. And of the Academy's 43-member board of governors, only 6 are women. So
only
no
six. Only
that
six.
We see women underrepresented in an award ceremony like last night.
Go ahead, Jorge.
Yeah, I mean, so she's exactly right. I think so. The LA Times. So one, I think the first thing that I should point out is that the Academy doesn't actually collect these demographics. So they had no, when the LA Times went to them to ask questions about their demographics, they actually had no idea who was part of the Academy. And so there's about 5,700 members, and the LA Times did an 8-month investigation where they sent out surveys to 5,000 of the members, and that's how they reached these numbers. And there's some groups within the Academy, like that were mentioned earlier, like the cinematography and visual effects section, that's about 95% white males that just dominate those groups.
So what is the essence of that? What does that mean, though, for the industry itself, for what we see, what we know, what is not included in the Academy Awards, what films never get to be talked about? I mean, is this a factor in all of this?
So I think it's a multi-layered issue. So one thing that we have to consider is that the studios have something to do with this also, because studios decide what scripts get funded and are made into movies and who's casted in these roles and whether and as a result, if we don't have any black actors in leading roles, then we don't have any black actors to nominate in for the Oscars. So, for example, this year we only had 2 actors of color that were nominated, and that was Denzel Washington and Kovanjane Wallace, for leading actress in a best actress category. It has a lot to do with how people vote. So if you consider that the writers category is 98% white males, then when a film like Django wins in the writing category, then it's not a big surprise to me.
And just to add to that,
please,
it really makes a difference in the kinds of movies that get made. To go back to the gender issue specifically, researchers have found that when the storytellers and the directors are female, you do tend to see more characters that are female. So it really does make a difference, and it's kind of a vicious cycle whereby the people that pick the winners tend to be white males, and those that win go on to make the films and get the funding, and then they in turn are inducted into the Academy, so the circle is complete and there's not a lot of room for diversity there.
Well, this is Anthony McCarthy. I have to ask a broader question because I certainly understand the demographics. I certainly understand the obvious diversity gap in the membership as well as the decision making. But when it comes to studios, Jorge and Lynn, and the decisions on what scripts get funded, what movies get made, which actors get cast, isn't it a little bit more simple than the conspiracy? Isn't it really just about what sells in America? Isn't it really about what audiences want to see? And there are demographic information. There is data that kind of drives this idea of what we're going into theaters to see.
Well, I would just jump in and reiterate that over 50% of the ticket buyers for movies are women. Mm-hmm. And so that suggests to me that making movies that are primarily written and directed by men and who focus on male characters is probably not a good economic decision. I think Hollywood is actually leaving money on the table by not doing more to encourage diversity, because if the women are buying the tickets, you know, they want to see movies that they can identify with, and I think their choices are somewhat limited.
Well, Jorge, in the work you've been doing, what movies and actors and films were missing, do you think?
Well, I think that one big flag for me is actually not about the films, but it was in the In Memoriam.
This is interesting. Please, yeah, talk about this. Yeah,
yeah. When they honored actors and actresses that had passed away in the past year, and there were two actors that were left out. One of them was Lupe Ontiveros, who's a Mexican American actress that passed away last year. She has been working in the industry for about 35 years. She started in Steven Spielberg's Goonies. She went on to appear in movies like Selena, which were huge for the Latino community, and she was left out. She's had a 35-year career, has been in dozens of movies, and she was left out. The other person who was left out was Native American actor Russell Means.
Right.
There was no mention of either of them. And to answer the earlier question, Latinos are the fastest growing group in the country, and you're talking to one who likes movies, and there's a lot more people like me.
But Jorge and Lynn, I mean, I guess just to push back a little bit, even at 50% of the movie tickets being purchased by women, obviously, to a certain extent, I would have to glean from this that these women are, although maybe limited choices, are choosing. They're going into the theater. Movies are being successful, especially these action films with these leading male characters doing these extraordinary things. And we know that there are great emotional, heroic films that feature women making it to the screen. I'm not sure if the problem isn't as deep as we're making it.
Lynn, go ahead.
Well, I would actually point to the Oscars ceremony last night as an example of what's going on in Hollywood.
Good point.
You know, a lot of us sat down to watch the Academy Awards with our families. We were delighted to see a young actress, K'Vonjine Wallace, nominated for an award. And yet the ceremony opens with a musical number about women's boobs.
Yeah.
For those who didn't see it,
right.
Seth MacFarlane did a musical number about the women in the audience, many famous actresses, accomplished actresses, and having seen their boobs in various movies. Now, there were several layers of irony that were supposed to, you know, surround that skit to make it okay with the audience. But to me, beyond the cleverness of the way it was packaged, it seemed to me a real recognition of the fact that women are still viewed, even the most serious ones. Even Meryl Streep was mentioned in the musical number, that they're still not really taken seriously, and their work is not taken as seriously. So I think that said a lot. There's been a lot of debate about the other kinds of racist and off color and sexist jokes that really permeated the show last night. But I think if you watch that show, you can't escape the idea that Hollywood is still a man's world and movies are getting made in some sense by and for a predominantly white male audience.
And I'm going to ask another question about that. Before I want you to make sure I ask Jorge this question, because I think the issues you just raised, Lynn, are very important, and that a lot of times when we look at what we talk about marketing, we see what we are marketed to with. In other words, what we are given is what we end up liking.
Yes, I think that's true. And, you know, again, to point to a study that was done in 2009 at the University of Southern California, we find, I mean, a lot of this probably happens on an unconscious level. We're not aware of it when we go to the movies, but researchers have found that men are far less likely to wear sexy and revealing clothing. There are more parts available to them. They are in conversation with each other more often than female characters are in conversation, and a lot of this seems so normal as to, you know, sort of pass by the conscious level of you know, we don't even register it, but it's there. If you look at the data and you look at the numbers, you can see that this slant really exists.
And Jorge, you were also writing about the documentaries.
Yes. So, and this past Saturday I sat down in a theater for 15 hours and watched every single one.
That's what I heard.
Well, I should say that I skipped the last one because I'm 29 years old and my back was in pain.
You're 29 and you're complaining about your back working? I'm just kidding.
Yes,
go ahead.
After sitting for 15 hours, yes. So I think that this is a lot of the issues that are not addressed in every other film that was nominated for an Oscar. I think some of those issues do get in through the documentary short and feature categories. And so to speak about the gender issue, I think that there was one really amazing documentary called The Invisible War. It's a feature documentary.
Right.
And it looks at sexual abuse and rape and in within military departments. So according to the Department of Defense, they estimate that there's about 2010 there were 19,000 members of the U.S. military that were sexually assaulted. Mm. And the name of the film is called The Invisible War because it's a subject that no one's talking about. And so this feature didn't make it, and neither did. I mean, so what? This did not win the Oscar for in that category, and neither did a film about the AIDS activist group ACT UP.
ACT UP, right?
That pressured the FDA to change the ways that they review drugs. That film is called How to Survive a Plague. But if you And again, so I think that when you look at what film won, which is a film called Searching for Sugar Man, which was the one film that was not political in that category, that's what won. And so if we go back to the discussion that we were having earlier about demographics of the Academy, it makes a little bit of sense that that's the film that would make it, that would make the cut.
Well, and I enjoyed that film, but I also enjoy the other films, and I think that they and again, I think it goes to who does the choosing.
That's right.
Who's picking these films?
Because I think we also need to let our audience understand, and Lynn and Jorge, correct me if I'm wrong. Not everyone votes on Best Picture. Not everyone votes on Best Documentary. Just because you're a member of the Academy doesn't mean you vote on all of these categories. Correct.
Right.
You vote actually in the category of your specialty.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's a short list that a very specific group votes on before it even gets to that point. Also.
Wow.
Right. And I think it also speaks to Lynn, what you were writing about, which is that in many ways, women in the film industry still have a long way to go. The glass ceiling in the film industry, people don't really realize about.
Yes, they do. It was wonderful to see Catherine Bigelow win, be the first woman to win Best Director back in 2009, the only woman to win Best Director. But she's really the exception that proves the rule. And, if, for example, if you look at pay scales, the median annual pay in film in 2009 was about $76,000 for men, and that compares to about $62,000 for women. So there is a real pay gap operating. And, you know, Kathryn Bigelow is an interesting case, too. She's certainly an extremely talented filmmaker, but she has made her career making the kind of action movies that really do focus on male characters and tend to play to a male audience. So one might almost, you know, wonder if that's what a woman has to do in order to reach the highest level of recognition in Hollywood to make films that are geared towards men.
I this always kind of begs a discussion about what do people want to see, and what would people see if we were doing things in a different way. We had a really interesting discussions here a month back about the movie Lincoln, actually talking about rewriting certain scenes to add more, give more character to the black characters in the film. What would that have done to the film? And I think this is something that because we have in our minds that this is what sells, and this is all we can make. The rest is a waste of time and money.
Well, I would point to, for example, the difference between the film industry and the television industry. There certainly are diversity problems in the television industry, but when it comes to women, for example, there tends to be a little bit less. The numbers are a little bit better for women participating in various aspects of the business. And shows being geared more often towards women and having strong female characters. And it has been theorized that perhaps that is because television relies more on commercial advertising and the recognition that women are in the audience buying products makes people a little more cognizant of gearing the content towards them, where film operates in a slightly different way. But, you know, the traditional soap operas, for example, they're sort of a dying breed now, but they were geared towards housewives, and they did remarkably well for many, many years. They were cash cows. They sold a lot of soap and other products. So I think, you know, the model that one can create products that are marketed towards women and do very well financially is certainly there in the television industry. It's just that film is a little bit behind, it seems.
Well, I want to thank both of you. This has been a fascinating discussion. Look forward to having you both back on the program with us. Lynn Stewart-Paramore, you just heard, Alternet's senior editor, director of Alternet's new economic dialogue project, Jorge Rivas, who is multimedia editor and pop culture blogger for ColorLines.com. Thank you both so much for being here on The Mark Steiner Show.
Thanks, good to be with you. Thank you.
Talk to you all soon. Thank you. We're going to take a very brief break and come back. We're going to be talking about Bradley Manning and his case with Kevin Zeese. So don't go away. We'll come back with that. And then we're going to move on to also talk about W.E.B. Du Bois. Yesterday was the 145th anniversary of his birth.